Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is David Love.
This is Lana Love. Welcome to our show. Today we're very, very happy and honored to have Sasha Stone on our show.
So we're talking about social paradigms and the social lies, and we're also talking about our own natural birthrights as living beings, sovereign beings.
Yes, and you can engage a soul revocation exercise, which is popularly espoused by Andrew Bartzis, and we certainly picked that up from him when we were working more closely together. The soul revocation exercise is an important one, but actually, in my own vernacular, simply being able to address oneself and one's own reflection in the now is the perfect key to engaging one's sovereignty. Meaning to say, not hiding from an aspect of oneself, a shadow within oneself.
What I found is, in meditation, is I found I was able to be an independent observer of my thoughts and feelings. And I realized a lot of these things that you call programming that I believed were true were not my thoughts and feelings. And I came to learn that I am the I am. I define myself. And all of these other things coming in at me are up to me whether I accept them or not. And to me, that is sovereignty. And in doing that, I reclaimed my personal power, my inner power, my self-confidence, and that to me was sovereignty, to know that I have the ability to control my own mind and not be influenced by outside sources if I choose not to.
You just said it beautifully. And that is the crossroad. And when you come to it, the question is, what do you do? Do you fall in line with the status quo? Do you go along with the expectations of your husband or your wife or your family or your community or your society or the local precinct or whatever institution you work with? They also have their own myths. They have their own cultures. And they're highly toxic, ultimately, to a sovereign being. Whenever you get pulled into the groundswell of a collective meme or a collective pattern, you need to be very careful, because they're almost invariably all parasitic by nature.
Can I also say, we're talking about sovereignty, but I guess I'd like to emphasize that from the work that I've seen that you do and the movements that have resulted, it's not just about our own sovereignty. It is about being able to work collectively in a united fashion. It's not just about us.
Understand, you're right to raise the point there. You're absolutely right. It was the perfect time to raise that point based on what I was just saying. But please understand that you can only activate the empathic wave in the human heart, which actually connects you truthfully to other living beings. You can only activate that empathic nature once you've engaged with your sovereignty. So be clear, you only want to engage with a group of people when they are also resonating or vibrating, so to speak, to that empathic value. Otherwise, again, just caught up inside an elemental cloud intelligence, which will always do unto itself, and which is what always happens when people come together with the wrong values or the wrong vibrational values. They ultimately engage in the entropic aspect, and that entropy will do unto itself. Whereas, on the other hand, if you engage with that empathic, sovereign heart space and you become connected to living brothers and sisters, keyed into a new form of life-affirming, creative expansion, then, of course, it becomes an incredibly enlivening and beautiful thing. And one goes to ever more dizzying heights in the pursuit of pure truth and one's own expression.
So perhaps we should redefine the movement as not just sovereignty, but empathic sovereignty.
That's very nice, except that we'd probably lose 95% of people at the starting gate, and that would be counterintuitive. Because actually, I speak in terms of sovereignty equates to consciousness in action. And consciousness in action is, by definition, sovereignty.
Surely for this to work, though, we have to rise also above ourselves and see that we are not just individuals, but we are one. The whole universe is one, and therefore it is important that we have a goal.
Yes, of course, Lana, you're right to say that. But again, I disagree with you that it is about rising outside of oneself. I suggest that one can only engage with that particular lens through the heart, meaning to say, to play with words a little bit, that we have to go very much within in order to gain or transcend to that state of witness. But of course, you're right. The outcome is the same. When one engages in that space, you recognize that the fundamentally all separation is part of the great illusion, of course.
In order to rise above, you have to go within through introspection and reflection. So in order to escape the matrix, you have to go within yourself and look at yourself.
Yes. There is no escaping from the matrix. You can only escape through the matrix and into
life. Right. It's about that inner self examination, and that's no skipping levels, and there's no other way to do it.
But be aware, there's also a very popular kind of, again, to use that word, meme, in the world at large today, which is people running into this notion that we are all one, we are all one, we are all one. Well, that's a given. Obviously, we're all one because we came from a single cell. We came from an amoeba. We come from the spermatozoan. So life and the organic flow of the mathematics, the geometry of life proves out that we are all 0 point and we are all the fulmination of expression at the same time. So we don't even need to have that conversation because it's kind of futile. But actually, it's not just that we are one. I think we need to recognize that we are singular, discrete units of that oneness for a very good reason. We elected at the soul level to be born into the temporal plane, to be born into the 3D holographic form in order to undertake something, in order to be something in the here and now. So the idea of always running to the notion of oneness, I think, this can also be counterproductive to many people out there who are otherwise seekers. Actually, many people need to stop focusing on the oneness and actually fully integrate with the fact that they are separate from the oneness and be okay with it, make peace with that aspect of division and separateness, and then be able to re-engage with the greater collective.
I call that the separate but equal theory of consciousness, which means we're separate but equal. And it's as within, so without, as above, so below. There's no real distinction. We are one, but yet we are individual personalities within the one, like a drop of ocean within the ocean of consciousness.
It's like the duality of a particle of light. You know, it's both a wave and a particle at the same time.
Yeah. That's how you become.
Actually, you'll probably find the most advanced astrophysicists in their theorems are determining that it is neither a wave nor a particle. Those are the conversations I've been having anyway.
All right.
It gets a little deeply philosophical and scientific and everything, but
something I wanted to raise was you talked about the fact that we were all elected to be here, and that almost like we have a purpose. It's like Earth is a school, and we're here to learn. However, we're hearing a lot about the matrix and getting out of the matrix. And many people many spiritual people are saying that the experiences we're having are, in fact, we're being controlled. We're in this matrix. So I guess the question I'd like to ask you is this a genuine experience that we asked to be in, or are we being controlled by other entities for whatever purpose?
Or is it both?
Or is it?
Well, I think one doesn't need to stray too far from physics, again, to be able to understand the answer to that question, which is an answer which is self-evident, self-revealing, and self-reflecting at all times. We understand that the building blocks of our so-called reality, in the 3D sense, we've broken down to an understanding that we have discrete forms like molecules and atoms and subatomic particles, quarks and so on, and neurons and protons and all the rest of it. And we also understand that there is a huge amount of subspace that exists between the real forms. So if you stop the spinning in an atom, arguably you would get a particle that's so small that it doesn't even feature. We imagine this by suggesting that if all of the atoms in the world were to stop the spinning and the vibrational patterns within their own forms, that the entire planet Earth would fit onto a tablespoon. I think that is very, very likely that that's the case. And the most advanced theoretics that I've been able to put my brain around explain that out rather well. But the point is not that. The point is that we are living anyway in an illusory framework of reality. We like to call it 3D. We seem to imagine that it's solid, but in real terms, it's only the illusion of the vibration of the atoms that creates that solidity. But we are always engaging in projecting aspects of the unrealized self at the individual level. We are throwing that out into the ethers. So if you compound the fact that I am ignorant, which I certainly am, and 7 billion other souls on the planet are equally ignorant, which they certainly are, and we are all of us projecting outwardly into the ethers the aspects of self that have been unrequited, unfulfilled, unrealized, then that huge, monstrous field of unexplored expression goes up into the ethers and assumes a nature of its own. It becomes ultimately what you would commonly refer to as the archonic presence. Okay, and that in turn is something which becomes equipped to drive notions, elemental ideas like Yahweh or Jehovah or Zog the Almighty. So the next thing issuing out of that vast plasma field of the archonic mind, which again is the undeveloped, unrequited, unfulfilled, unrealized aspect of our own consciousness. And that creature becomes the gods and becomes the drivers of the creatures that we otherwise deem to be coming to get us.
Are you saying that's the matrix?
Yes. Well, no, I suggest the matrix is simply a way of us trying to fumble in the dark and describe a reality which in and of itself is inexplicable. But you know, the ethers, the nested ethers, the building blocks of reality that actually prop up even subatomic particles, the ethers themselves are the matrix in that sense. So why would we even consider escaping the matrix if the matrix is comprised of the building blocks of our reality anyway? It's just a way of us trying to explain to ourselves and express the fact that we are frustrated in our ignorance within our field of expression, that we seek to escape something called the matrix. But we need to transcend that language because it's a bit infantile, I think.
So it's what's within ourself is what we're seeing in the world. It's if you have a mess within yourself, your environment will probably look messy. And so if there's 7 billion people in the world where their internal is sort of emotionally distressed, that distress will be reflected back to us from the universe, the reality that we see. The illusion of reality is the illusion that we're creating, and that takes on its own consciousness, I think.
Be careful, in my view, be careful there. It's not consciousness that it takes on, because the creature that I'm defining is not animated in and of itself. It is it gives the illusion of being animated, and as I said, we can call it Jehovah or Yahweh if we like. These are the angry, jealous gods of old, in a sense, that accreted into the ethers in diametric proportion to the collective abnegated consciousness of humanity. Be clear that humankind, Homo sapien, are the key. We are the Christ element here. We are the Bodhisattva element. We're the Krishna element. We are the crossroad between the higher dimensions, so to speak, and all the lower dimensions, so to speak. The higher tones of creation, the lower tones of creation, and they are embodied perfectly in our plane of reality. And that's the beautiful thing, is that you or I can choose to steer that spark of consciousness that defines you and I as discrete, separate aspects of the collective. That's why I'm happy to be me in this lifetime. I elected to be me. I'm not seeking to assimilate back into oneness right now. That's not my game. I'm actually taking full command of this cockpit called Sasha Stone. This is my spaceship, baby, and I'm flying it. So I project a plasma field outside of that cockpit. That plasma field will either reach the far reaches of the universe, which it can do through the empathic wave in my heart, or it will be constricted and a short wave form, which basically brings in very low vibrational and blunt experiences. So life will hurt me or it will bless me, depending entirely on what I am projecting my plasma toward. So if I'm going out looking for a fight, it'll bloody well find me. If I'm going out looking to change this planet, the entire planet, it will happen thus, because I say so.
You always get what you focus on. If you're focusing on roses, you're going to see roses. And if you're in a bad mood and you're seeking, if you're angry, you're going to see whatever it is you're looking for. If you're looking for a fight, as you said, you're going to get that fight.
Well, don't speak to 20 million people today who just lost at the horse races, because those 20 million people were all absolutely focusing on a positive outcome of a horse, but it didn't happen. So actually, the mechanics you've just mentioned do work, but only if you're putting out the right values and your expectations are married to a noble outcome. But if your expectations are being married to a material or a low vibrational outcome, you have no control. Your plasma will be very unwieldy and will be zigzagging all over the place.
I just love the way in which you've defined how this whole thing called existence, consciousness, ourselves, our unconsciousness, how it all comes together. It's absolutely brilliant. And law of attraction. And it's really interesting that you're talking about how, as humans, we are perfectly balanced in the middle between the low forms and the gods. Mm. That's brilliant. You've said
the gods are the low forms in that context. So therefore, okay. I didn't say that. I suggest the higher frequencies, the higher tones or expressions of creation, which absolutely bypass the gods. The gods are subservient to Homo sapien in that context.
Well, if we have the lower realms, and if you're talking about the gods as the lower realms, the angry gods, then surely we also have God or Buddha spirit or Nirvana as the higher realm, whether it exists or not.
Again, if one wants to project that, one has every right to so do. I still personally regard that as totemism or idolatry. I don't know why we feel the need to project a god as external from actuated self. To me, you're still insisting on separation by doing that. And why would one want to insist on that separation when one knows already, through hardship and sorrow and great pain over millennia, one knows that it is that insistence on the idea of separation that indeed maintains the separation. Again, it's all ideas and how we project our plasma. So yes, there are good people. There are millions of good monks and good Christians and good Muslims and good Hindus who are projecting very sweet tones and high vibrations and loving energetics into the stratosphere. But be clear, they're being harvested in that place and used as a fuel or as a foodstuff. Okay,
I have actually heard that.
These elemental cloud intelligences which maintain this lockdown on the activating of the collective consciousness, which is the newer sphere. And ultimately, what we were speaking about earlier, this oneness, was actually speaking toward the desire that we all have innately to realize the collective orgasm, the collective consciousness awakening, which is...
Did you say collective orgasm?
Yes, the collective orgasm is the awakening of the newer sphere, which is the collective conscious mind, not the unconscious one. The unconscious one is the one that turns into creatures, idols, totems, gods, archetypes, which come back at us and feed off our energy in order to be self-sustaining themselves.
You're talking about conscious awakening, the need for everybody to awaken and project consciousness.
I don't suggest one should project anything. I suggest one should be it. By being it, then one projects whatever one projects. It comes out as a natural function of being conscious. And the more conscious and more seated upon the throne of selfhood that one is, the more one aligns perfectly with that pure truth flame, which is the telephone to the superconscious mind. That is the telephone to God, but only accessible when one is sitting in the throne. When I say God, I mean the universal mind. That's my definition of
the right. I call it the universal mind as well.
Yeah.
What I would say is, the biggest problem we've had in life as a collective consciousness is that we've given our power away. We've given it away to gods, Yahweh. We've given it away to politicians and lawyers and allowed them to take our sovereignty and take care of us And rather than us taking responsibility for our own manifesting, and we've allowed other people to make decisions for us, and then we become unhappy as a result because we're not taking control of our own decision-making. And we're giving it away to entities who feed on negative energy. We're giving it away to entities who feed on positive energy. You realize that there are entities who feed on positive energy as well.
Oh, okay.
So, they
feed on energy. Energy. In that sense, yeah, whether it's good or bad, is almost immaterial because we are abnegating it or surrendering it and not using it consciously. That's the
right.
Conscious steering the plasma in a conscious way. And so if we don't steer it in a conscious way, it dissolves off us and becomes a kind of hybrid foodstuff for these elemental clouds, which we then civilizationally end up calling God or calling whatever, demons.
Yeah, they're feeding on the life force, and we're being casual creators instead of conscious creators or reality artists.
So in talks of in terms of practical ways in which we can do this, apart from meditation, are you suggesting other ways? You've suggested, like in New Earth Project, you're suggesting a conscious way of creating a new community. So
I suggest that there are no rules and no regulations and no statutes and no ordinances and no codes and no bylaws, and nor should there ever be. In a conscious world populated by conscious living men and women, there would be no need to have these ridiculous enclosures and ideas, imagined borders and institutions that end up policing us. And when we give them the power to police us, they overstep the mark and begin to devour us. And then we get systems and governments and churches filled with Satanists and pedophiles and drug running and gun running and God knows what else. And when I mean drug running and gun running, I mean exactly that. Because if you want to know how the global financial system is propped up, it's entirely to do with drug running and gun running.
I actually do know.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. So the point is, when we give away our sovereignty, that is what eventuates things that devour us.
Yeah, and that is certainly possible, and I hate to say, is that idealistic? I mean, I know that we have the potential to do this, and we can do this as conscious creators, but can there be no rules and no... Can people take responsibility for themselves to that extent?
Ask yourself the question. Yeah. Don't ask that of other people. Only ask yourself the question. Can you responsibly go and walk on a beach and look at the sunrise and feel blissed out, or can you not?
No.
Right. So I give every brother and sister on the planet, no matter how violent or criminally bent they are, they're only violent and criminally bent because of an entirely toxic, fundamentally poisonous environment, culturally, socially, psychologically, emotionally, intellectually violent against them. And everyone has become mutated in that sense. And for any of us to no longer be mutated by the atmosphere, by the environment around us, we have to steer our own ship in a very mindful and heart-centered way in order to no longer be subject to those laws of entropy, which otherwise eat our bodies and our souls. It's very difficult. We're all of us engaged in that process.
Sasha, if our world currently is a reflection of us, then the question is, if you change the environment, would the same thing not come up? I mean, you're going to have people at different levels of awakening. And what you're proposing would be wonderful if everyone could awaken.
Right.
But if everyone doesn't awaken, you have a certain number of beings that are awakened.
You're not correct. In my view, you're not correct in saying that. And I'll explain why, if you'll follow me. And let me finish this, because I need to make the statement. It is not that way, because the human genome, no matter whether you are Asian or sub-Saharan African or European, doesn't matter. The human genome is the human genome, and it is equipped with ascension coding. It is equipped with the capacity to engage the superconscious mind like that. And it is also, it is capable also of tremendous horrors and engaging in awful bloodlust and awful practice. So we are hardwired in such a way that we can become the full spectrum of the lower tones of expression and the highest tones of expression By definition, that's what we are. And there are different tendencies amongst the Asians to be a bit more calculating, perhaps, and the Africans to be a bit more fundamentally, you know, dangerous when it comes to a battlefield, and you push them over the edge. The white men are more manipulative. You know, so one can make certain, you can say certain, make certain statements, broad statements about different aspects of the human family, which would all stand up to scrutiny. But fundamentally, we're all equipped with the same technology, the technology to ascend and to descend. And well, in that sense, I would suggest that once the environment of the earth is remediated, once we are no longer allowing ourselves to be subjected to the satanic and Luciferian practices of invisible overlords, and we've actually engaged the human family as a living, loving, collective, awakening organism, and that creature will start to communicate to itself telepathically and through our intuitive capacity to love and be loved. And when we engage in that capacity to simply love and be loved, we will educate one another into that collective genius almost instantaneously. That is, forget even 100th monkey syndrome. This is the 12 billionth monkey syndrome. It'll happen, boom, like that.
And Sasha, that is so inspiring. That is so, and certainly that's part of my belief system. Yeah. And you know, in Buddhism, that we all have the potential to become Buddhas.
Never let go of that. Don't ever let go of that beautiful belief that you hold to. Don't ever let go of it. I know that to be the truth, and I'm not afraid of the most demonic human being. I'm not afraid because I understand how mutation pushes certain people over the edge. Now, the failing, please be clear, the failing is not in that creature in front of me with an axe. The failing is in me being unable to steer that creature back into heartfulness by my plasma. So ultimately, I take responsibility for whatever creature emerges on my radar screen in life. If it's wielding an axe, I have absolutely summoned that creature. I take full account. I'm speaking from experience, incidentally. I'm not going to go into it now.
No, we've had that conversation about these.
In scenarios
Sasha, can I just challenge you there? Can I challenge you to say that is a very, very responsible yet somewhat selfish view? I love the idea that any monster, any axe murderer in front of us is merely a manifestation of ourselves. However, as you said, we're all single entities, and assuming that axe murderer is a human as opposed to a demon, he or she is also a single entity who has manifested you in front of him.
Yes and no, Lana, because if it's a demon entity we're talking about, then no, it doesn't have its own discrete consciousness.
No, if we're not talking about a demon entity, if we're talking about another human, perhaps a criminal bent on murdering us, right?
Yes.
That criminal, according to your theory, is also responsible for you.
That creature is coming at you with an axe, and you are having that creature come at you with an axe. In the first instance, I have summoned that creature into my field of experience and expression. Why? For countless reasons. There could be a karmic bond that goes back a very long time. And there could be many reasons for it. But either doesn't matter. Only the now matters. And how I appraise the now is what matters. And I know that I'm not a victim to anything or anyone in this world. So if it's manifested, I have summoned it. Now, in knowing that I have summoned it, in the first instance, I'm owning full command of the spaceship and the situation. So that thing will not be able to wield its axe at me because I am driving the situation. The highest frequency drives the symphony every time. That creature with the axe, in a sense, has absolutely manifested me on their radar screen. For what purpose? As I see it, the purpose must always be for absolution. For the strongest suit to be able to absorb the base energetic frequency of the lowest or the darkest suit and bring that into rectitude. People are very inhibited in their own creativity and don't feel that they have a right to be thinking that far outside the box. They feel unworthy. They don't believe in themselves enough to be able to dream their most beautiful dream, which is a crying shame. And in other cases, they're too stupid because they've drunk the Kool-Aid and they've brushed their teeth with fluoride and they've become fundamentally so poisoned and downgraded at the genetic level, genome level, that they can't function. Their pineal is completely calcified. Their blood is diseased and polluted. Their bones are aching. Their marrow is poisoned. And they're walking around trying not to die, basically. Right. One day to another, just hoping to get through the day. And at the same time, being savagely weighed down by debt and by the propaganda spitting in their faces out of every television screen in Hollywood's movies. So given that that's the fucked up nature of the world that is facing so many beloved brothers and sisters, it behooves us to just extricate ourselves from that bad dream and begin to dream a new one. So that's the process I engaged with. But it's a whole systems approach, and it's had to engage economics. It's had to engage a relative understanding of the biosphere and the relationship of humans and nature and earth as if there was any separation. And an understanding of law, which, as David will testify, is the most exquisitely sophisticated game of bullshitting that was ever created.
In the Middle Ages, we had Catholic priests who told us what we were supposed to know about the Bible, the rules. Now we have lawyers who we pay hundreds of dollars an hour to tell us what our rights are and defend our rights in administrative tribunals. Now, this is very confusing to me, and I know some very good lawyers who protect humanity, and I work with quite a few, and I've worked with them, but there are many that I know do take advantage of people and their money and their time. In order to unplug from the matrix, you need to unplug from that white noise in order to have clear thinking and clarity of thought, in order to have strategic thinking and good decision making, in order to make this vision real and make this new earth reality manifest.
Absolutely, absolutely. So thank you, Sasha Stone, very much.
Thank you so much.
And goodbye to all of our listeners. Oh. And from Universal Soul Love.
We'll see you next time on Universal Soul Love. Goodbye. Thank you, Sasha.
Thank you.